Okay, good evening. I hope everyone can hear me. So far, so good. Okay, I hope so. I'd like to talk a little bit tonight about the obligation of Dalet Kozlus as we approach Pesach. This is one of the obligations that we have of the Seder night, and it's a little different from some of the other obligations that we have in that it's completely of rabbinical origin. Much of the Seder night is from the Torah itself. Some aspects of it that may not be biblically required nowadays, but it's at least rooted in the Torah itself. And the obligation of the four cups of wine, that's purely a rabbinical innovation. Even though the Talmud Yerushalmi does tell us, as is well known, that it's connected perhaps to what we call the four Lashonos of Geula, the four expressions of redemption that we find in Parashas Va'era, four verbs that connote our experience in leaving Egypt, Vahotseisi, Vitzalti, Vigaalti, Vilakasti, those four different phrases, Vahotseisi, I took you out, Vitzalti, I rescued you, Vigaalti, I redeemed you, Vilakasti, I brought you. So these four phrases are represented by the four cups of wine. The Ramban in his commentary to Chumash points out that each one indicates another level of the experience, another stage of what happened. For Sfarotesi, we were taken out of Mitzrayim. Vahotzalti, we were saved from the experience of slavery, not only there, but anywhere else. Vigaalti, the fact that the Mitzrim were dealt with after they tried to chase after us. Kadosh Baruch Hu made message clear to them that we're gone, we're free. And Vilakasti, the ultimate bringing to Har Sinai, all of these are represented by these four different languages. So the Talmud Yerushalmi tells us that the four cups of wine suggest these four different verbs, these four expressions, and it prompts the question, as the Mordechai writes in his commentary to Masechet Pesachim, that maybe it shouldn't have to be wine, maybe it should be four pieces of meat. It's also got the number four in it. That's something I would personally relate to a little bit more. So there are various approaches to why specifically wine. And the Tziv writes in his commentary to Chumash that as each stage represents a change, represents a level of ascent, so therefore we want to use something which brings about a change in our personality, a change in how we relate, and therefore wine seems to be the winning choice. So that's one perspective that we have towards the four cups of wine, that the four cups are patterned after the four expressions of Geula, the way the Talmud Yerushalmi tells us. And the truth is, we could perhaps suggest another perspective as well. It emerges from some of the rabbinic literature around this topic, most explicitly the Brisker Rav, Rav Elbel Soloveitchik, and his commentary to the Rambam. He has it a little bit differently than we're going to say it here. But there is a question one could perhaps ask about this obligation of four cups of wine. What exactly does this obligation mean? How exactly are we fulfilling this theme of Pesach? But on the one hand, we could say, like we just seem to have started, that there really is a mitzvah to drink wine. That's the mitzvah. That perhaps mitzvah represents cheres, wine represents cheres, wine represents transformation, freedom. So there is a specific commandment to drink wine on Pesach. And then the question is, so why four cups? Why not one cup? Why not 20 cups? So four cups to parallel again the four expressions of Geula. So in other words, the mitzvah to drink wine and to do it four times in keeping with the themes of Geula, the themes of redemption. Alternatively, we could say differently. We could say that really the mitzvah is not drinking wine. That's not so much what we're interested in. But rather, there is a mitzvah on the Seder night to recite certain things. There are mitzvahs of speech. And there are actually, if you look, there are perhaps four mitzvahs of speech. And maybe the idea here is that each one of these mitzvahs should be performed in the presence of a cup of wine. But we know that very often when we want to give a bracha, recite a blessing, we want it to have more importance, we want it to have more significance. So we do it in the presence of a cup of wine. We're familiar with benching taking place with a cup of wine, havdalah recited over a cup of wine. If one goes to a wedding, we see at the chuppah, so the sheva brachos, the seven brachos recited under the chuppah, are recited over a cup of wine. So perhaps that's the idea, that we prefer to recite brachos in the presence of wine, it gives it a little bit more significance. And maybe Pesach night, there are four such mitzvahs. And those mitzvahs would commonly be counted as the mitzvah of Kiddush, the mitzvah of Haggadah, the mitzvah of benching, and the mitzvah of Hallel. Four mitzvahs throughout the night of Pesach, all revolving around speech. And perhaps the idea is that all of these four mitzvahs should be done in the presence of wine. And here too, it's thematically linked to Pesach, because the Talmud tells us in the context of Havdalah that when the Jews hit harder times, they didn't have so much money and they were having a hard time financially, so the rabbis allowed them to recite Havdalah without a cup of wine, just words. And then when they got back on their feet, when they had money again, they were able to afford wine, so then Chazal said, okay, you should go back to reciting the Havdalah on the cup of wine. And what emerges from that Gemara is that the idea of reciting on wine is also an indication of people being well off, of the Jews being in good shape, of them perhaps being in a state of chayrus, being in a state of freedom. And the fact that they're in this preferable state, the fact that they are able to be a little bit more well off, that's represented by the wine. So perhaps that's the idea, that if Pesach night, we're trying to show that we are free, that we're in a higher financial status, so to speak, we're in a higher status of comfort. So then maybe it's more necessary to have the wine there for the brachos than it would be any other time. So again, that leaves us with two distinct perspectives as to what it is we're going for when we have an idea of four cups of wine. On the one hand, it could be a mitzvah to drink wine four times. Or it could be a mitzvah to recite Kiddush, to bench, to recite the Haggadah, and to recite the Hallel, each one over a cup of wine. So really, it's not a din in drinking, it's not a mitzvah to drink wine, it's rather it's a mitzvah to perform these speech mitzvahs over wine. So it doesn't make a difference. Does it matter? Does it affect the halacha at all? So I'd like to look briefly at some examples how it may affect the halacha, and then maybe see what this says to us about the experience as a whole. So first of all, there is what seems to be, you have to look carefully in order to find this, but it seems to be a debate among the Rishonim, between the Rambam on the one hand, and the Tosus on the side of the page of the Talmud, a debate about the following question. That normally, when we have a mitzvah of speech, like for example, Kiddush Friday night, so we have a principle that's called Shomea Ka'one, which normally means that if I hear somebody else who's obligated in Kiddush recite the Kiddush, I can have intent to fulfill Kiddush through listening to him. And that works for me. So would we go so far as to say this should be true by the four cups of wine Pesach night as well? So it sounds like, from the opinion of Tosus on the side of the page of the Talmud, like this is a theoretical possibility. And we'll explain the context of it in a moment, but that's what it sounds like from the Tosus, that this is something that we might be able to consider. And from the Rambam, again, the Rambam's not very explicit about this, you have to read the Rambam carefully, and this is something that the Brisker Rav interprets from the Rambam, that it sounds like from the Rambam that this is not an option, that this is not something I could fulfill through hearing somebody else do it, but that I have an obligation to have my own four cups of wine, and it's not enough to listen to the head of the household, like perhaps I might do Friday night, or perhaps I might do for Havdalah. And the question really seems to be, the difference between these two opinions, is what is the mitzvah of the four cups of wine? If the mitzvah is to drink four cups of wine, so then it doesn't seem like Shomea Ka'ona, like listening, should play a role. Shomea Ka'ona is only a mechanism that we use for speech-related mitzvahs. For example, Pesach night we have a mitzvah to eat matzah. So no one would say that I don't have to eat my own matzah, but I could listen to somebody else crunching the matzah and that'll be enough. I'll fulfill it through listening to somebody else eating. Clearly that's not something we're even going to consider, because we understand if the mitzvah is a mitzvah of eating, it doesn't have any type of mechanism like this. So why might the four cups of wine be different? Why might it be that Tosis might tell us that at least in theory, you could fulfill the four cups of wine through listening to the head of the household? Because maybe the mitzvah isn't really to drink the wine. Maybe the mitzvah is very comparable to Kiddush. But every Friday night, we hear Kiddush recited. Very often it's one person in the household reciting Kiddush and everyone else listening. And the idea seems to be that the mitzvah is the speech. The mitzvah is the words of Kiddush. Those words should be recited over wine. But if I'm listening to somebody who's holding wine, so that's good enough. So maybe for the four cups of wine, it should also be like that, that the mitzvah to hear these four different passages, these four different speech mitzvahs over wine. So let me listen to somebody else do them, and I don't have to have my own cup of wine. So in a sense, that could be the difference between the Tosus and the Rambam. The Rambam essentially holding the mitzvah to drink four times, so listening plays no role. And Tosus understanding the mitzvah to recite something four times, to recite four things, each time over wine. So maybe through listening to somebody else, maybe it's possible for me to fulfill this obligation as well. Should point out, it's not 100% clear that Tosus really means that this is a real option, that we could really fulfill it through listening to somebody else, and that that would totally take care of the whole obligation. The context of Tosus, which I would explain, the Mishnah says in the 10th parak of Pesachim, the Mishnah tells us that having four cups of wine at the Seder is so important that even somebody who can't afford anything else, even somebody who has to ask for tzedakah, who has to ask for the charity for his meals, should make sure to also ask for the four cups of wine. But that's a crucial part of the experience, and even though he's having other people pay for it, he should have them pay for the four cups of wine. There's a well-known story about this, about the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi was the original Rabbi Yeshua Ber Soloveitchik, the great-grandfather of Rabbi Soloveitchik from YU. So Rabbi Yeshua Ber Soloveitchik, the Beis HaLevi, was once asked, a woman came to him and asked him if it would be possible to perhaps use milk for the Seder night. The Talmud has an idea, it's not out of nowhere, the Talmud has an idea that milk is almost intoxicating, it makes you tired, it makes you drowsy. So maybe if the idea is to drink wine, maybe you could drink milk also. And the Beis HaLevi said to her, no, it's not a good idea, you shouldn't drink milk, you should use wine. And he gave her money to buy wine. So after she left, the student said to him, Rebbe, I saw how much money you gave her, that was a lot more than the price of wine. He told them, you have to listen carefully. You have to listen to the question behind the question. If she came and she said that she wants to use milk for the four cups of wine, so you can see not only can she not afford wine, apparently she can't afford meat either. She's planning on having a milchik seder or a par seder. Otherwise she wouldn't be able to drink milk. So the fact that she's considering drinking milk shows you it's not only milk she needs to pay for, it's meat also. So I gave her more money for that. But the whole context of that story is this idea in the Mishnah, that I see a question come up here just to clarify. The idea of Shemei Ka'oneh would presume, the way it sounds like, is that you wouldn't necessarily have to drink the wine, that you could hear the person making the bracha, and the fact that they made the bracha over the wine, that should be enough. You shouldn't have to drink the wine. The same way Friday night, you don't really have to drink Kiddush. We want to be involved, but we drink a little bit, we don't have to drink. So to here, the suggestion seems to be that you wouldn't have to drink the wine at all. It's just the context that Tosfos is discussing here is to hear the Mishnah says that you have to go begging for the four cups of wine. So in that context, the Tosfos says, well, maybe we could lessen the burden a little bit. So let's say I have a household that has 10 people, so it's going to be 40 cups of wine. So to say the head of the household has to go begging for 40 cups of wine, for 80 cups for two nights, that's a big burden. Maybe we could say, let him get one set of four cups, and he'll drink the four cups, and everyone will say amen to his brachos, and that'll be enough. So if that's the context where Tosus introduces this idea, so it could be that Tosus never meant to say that really everything about the four cups of wine can be satisfied through listening to somebody else. Tosos agrees, as the language indicates, that they don't think this is a terrific idea. It's just talking about the specific concept of the Mishnah, the idea of going begging. So why should I go begging? I don't have to go begging for any other mitzvah. Why should I have to go begging for a mitzvah of the 4 cups of wine? That's interesting. Only the mitzvahs of Pursumei Nisa, the mitzvahs which are generally rabbinical mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Purim, mitzvahs of the Hanukkah candles, 4 cups of wine. It's only these mitzvahs where we find this idea that you have to go begging. So why is, what's so special about those mitzvahs? So the idea of Pursumei Nisa, the notion that we want to publicize the miracle, that's what gives these mitzvahs the special edge. So maybe Tosfos is just saying, since it's only publicizing the miracle that makes you have to go to such extremes, so then miracle is publicized if we have one set per household. As long as we have one set per household, we're satisfying that. So that doesn't require us to go begging for any more than one set per household. But the mitzvah of 4 cups really would suggest that everyone should have their own set. So it's a little bit of a question whether Tosfos even endorses this position. But in any event, the theoretical question of whether Shemei Ka'onet could work really goes to this issue: is it a mitzvah of drinking or is it a mitzvah of speaking? Another issue that might be affected by this is the question of how much do you have to drink? And here you find at least 3 different opinions within the Rishonim as to how much of each cup you have to drink. On the one hand, there is the view of Tosfos. And Tosfos, again, seems to be working off a Kiddush model. So Tosfos says, how much did you drink from each cup? So we call a Muller Lugmat. It's a cheekful, a volume that can be held in one cheek. That's the limit, that's the minimum you should drink from each of the 4 cups. It's interesting, it's the one measurement that we have that's subjective. Normally we talk about a kezayis of matzah, we talk about different types of measurements for food that are really set for every person, they should be the same. There's always a debate as to how you define the terms, but whatever term you define, however you define a kezayis, everyone eats the kezayis. But when it comes to drinking, when it comes to this particular shear, it's subjective. Everyone has a different size cheek, so it's going to depend on the person. So that, if you take that view of Tosfos, so that's consistent with what we just said, that Tosfos perhaps sees it as a mitzvah of reciting a bracha over a cup of wine. So therefore, a token drinking a cheekful like you do by Kiddush, that's enough. It's not really a mitzvah to drink the cup. However, in other Rishonim, you see a different view. You see a view either that you should drink a revius, we call the measurement a liquid measurement, and you should drink most of that revius, defined again in an objective sense, or it's whatever size the cup is, assuming the cup is big enough, then you should drink most of the cup, rov kos. So those two opinions seem to work off the view that it's a mitzvah of drinking. So the mitzvah is to drink the cup. So now we have a rule, rubo kukulo, that a majority counts as the whole thing. So a majority of the cup, or a majority of a revius, which is the objective measurement of a cup. But in any event, that seems to focus more on the mitzvah of drinking the cup. So here again, we see these two opinions. This is also something that Biskarov discusses. You see these two opinions emerging, that on the one hand, there is a view that it's a mitzvah to drink cups of wine, in which case we define the measurement based on cups of wine, or the majority of a cup. Or we could say it's a mitzvah to talk over a cup of wine, and therefore the drinking is kind of more of a formality, and a cheekful is going to be the sufficient measurement. There's an interesting discussion there's a sefer of Shalos and Tshuvos of responsor Shraga Feivel Schnellbeck, who was a rav in London, passed away a few years ago, has in his Tshuvos, it's called Shraga HaMeir, has the following question. We know we have an obligation on Yontif when we bench and when we daven to add in the paragraph Yalla V'Yavo, a special paragraph that we add for Yontif. And normally the rule is that when it comes to, let's say, benching, let's discuss it separately from Shmona Esrei. When it comes to benching, if one forgets to say Yalla V'Yavo, so are you obligated to repeat the benching? So it depends. If it was Rosh Chodesh, let's say, we just had Rosh Chodesh yesterday. So Rosh Chodesh, the Talmud tells us, there's no obligation to have a meal. So if you forget to say Yalla V'Yavo, since there's no obligation to have a meal, we don't ask you to repeat benching. But when it comes to Yontif, or when it comes to Shabbos, in the case of the paragraph of Ritzei, so there, we are obligated to have a meal. So therefore, if you leave Ayal Diavo, we ask you to repeat the benching. So when it comes to Pesach night, the meal is certainly obligatory for everybody, for men, for women, for everybody. So therefore, if one forgets to say Ayal Diavo, Pesach night, so certainly one would have to repeat the benching. So the Tshuva Shraga HaMeir raises the question that if one leaves out Ayal Diavo and repeats the benching, does he have to do it over another cup of wine? And that seems to revolve around the same issue. Do we assume, on the one hand, that it's a mitzvah to have four cups of wine? In which case, even though you have to bench again, but the cup was fine, so maybe there's no need to repeat the experience of that cup of wine. Or do we say no, that there's a mitzvah to recite benching over the cup of wine? And if your benching, your first benching didn't work, it didn't take, so to speak, you need to repeat it again, maybe I should be required to have another meal, have another cup of wine, rather, for the benching in order to have it ahakos. So there again, that question might depend, again, on how you define the mitzvah. Is it a mitzvah of drinking wine, or is it a mitzvah of, in this case, benching in the presence of a cup of wine? This also could be behind the scenes in an interesting theoretical debate that we find among the Rishonim in interpreting a passage in the Talmud. The Talmud has a discussion, which again is theoretical because it's rejected, but the Talmud says that let's say you drink the four cups of wine in one shot. Shasan bevas achas. You drink them all in one shot. So if you do that, so says the Talmud, Yidei Yayin Yatsa, so you fulfill the obligation of drinking wine, but you don't fulfill the obligation of four kosos, or the four cups. It's an interesting distinction. You can fulfill your obligation of wine, but not the mitzvah of the four cups. And that's the problem that you have if you do it all in one shot. What does that mean, one shot? How do you understand that phrase, drinking it all in one shot? So this was a debate between Rashi and his grandson, the Rashbam. They're both on the page over there in Sofen. So Rashi says that what this means is that you mixed them all up into one cup. You took one of these big novelty glasses, which were very long, and you took all the four cups of wine, you put it all into one shot, into one glass. So if you drank it that way, so you have yayin, but you don't have four cups. And the Rashbam says, I don't understand. Why would I even think that that should work? There's no upper limit to how big a cup is. So if I have one huge cup, I could put in the equivalent of 100 cups of wine, still called one cup. What would make me even think that that should be called four cups of wine? So Rashbam says, even as a theory, that can't be what we're talking about. So rather, when we talk about in one shot, says the Rashbam, what do we mean? We mean that instead of having it placed where it's supposed to be throughout the various meals, throughout the various parts of the meal, we drink it all in one shot without having it according to the right places in the Haggadah. So you see, these two opinions also kind of reflect the two possibilities here. According to Rashi, what are we looking for? We're looking for having the four cups of wine identifiable as four cups. In other words, a mitzvah to drink four times. So if that's the case, so then I cancel that out by mixing it all into one. I want to preserve four separate cups. Well, according to the Rashbam, maybe the issue is not so much the issue of four, but the issue that I want to have these cups of wine connected with the various mitzvos of the Seder that it's connected to. And if I've separated that, if I've done them all in one shot without aligning them up with the various mitzvos of night, then I'm losing out the idea of the four cups. So here again, it's a theoretical point, but it perhaps reflects these two possibilities. Now this idea of breaking it up, so to speak, of saying that there's a concept of wine and there's a concept of mitzvah of dalet kosos, and they're two separate things, kind of highlights the fact that there are various aspects to this mitzvah. And indeed, the Gemara in Pesachim also makes reference to a separate concept of cheres. There's an idea of the wine representing specifically freedom. And that component of cheres, it's interesting, could also play a role in the halacha. There's a couple of different examples we'll just note quickly. It's interesting, one area which is a very practical area And there's no safe side. If this issue is relevant to you, so you can't satisfy all the views in the poskim because it doesn't seem like a way to do it, it has to do with the following point. Let's say you have somebody, and many people like this, and I feel like this, who don't really enjoy drinking wine so much. And they feel that that's not a pleasant experience for them, and they feel that they would rather drink grape juice. So here you have what appears to be a debate between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik, and Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. I say what appears to be, it's by proxy. In both cases, it's not written directly by these figures, but it's quoted by their sons or students. But on the one hand, Rav Moshe's opinion is quoted by his son, Rav David Feinstein, in his Haggadah, and the Rav Soloveitchik's opinion is quoted by Rabbi Shechter in the Sefer Nefesh Hara. But they are basically diametrically opposed views. That according to Rav Moshe, it doesn't matter that you don't like wine, that you have to have wine. Because the idea of cheirus requires that you have something that's intoxicating. Requires that you have something that, again, as we saw before, changes your state of mind, and therefore grape juice doesn't cut it, it's going to have to be wine. And Rav Soloveitchik felt just the opposite. Rav Soloveitchik felt that if wine makes you miserable, so then that specifically doesn't work. Because the whole notion of cheres is that it should be something that makes you happy. It should be something that you feel is pleasing. And if wine is not going to make you happy, so then maybe wine specifically is not appropriate for this. Now, on the one hand, there seems to be some pretty solid proofs for Moshe's position. Right, so I was about to mention that there were some major posts in favor of this view, as I just saw a comment, so I'll talk about that in a second. But this idea that Rav Moshe has, that it should be specifically wine, is an idea that you find, seems to be some pretty solid proofs for, because the famous Yerushalmi, that one who had a sensitivity to wine, and he would drink wine on Pesach, he would have a headache from Pesach till Shavuos. The whole Sfiras Omer, he'd have a headache. And the Shulchan Aruch actually says that even if somebody feels the wine is very unpleasant, and it makes him uncomfortable, still he has to drink the 4 cups of wine. So it sounds like from those sources that maybe it's a necessity for everyone. But the truth is you could answer up both those proofs. First of all, it's questionable whether grape juice was given an option in those settings. It's very unclear that that was necessarily a possibility. So it could be that at the time of the Shulchan Aruch, even they didn't have access to grape juice all year round. So it was a question of wine or nothing, not necessarily a question of wine or grape juice. In addition, it could be that the Shulchan Aruch is talking about somebody who has a headache later, but enjoys it at that time. That while he's drinking it, he's going to have a good time. And then the next day, he's going to have a hangover, but maybe he'll be enjoying it then. So it's a question of what exactly the case is he's talking about. But for, at least the fact that grape juice may not have been an option is important to keep in mind when looking at that issue. So as was pointed out here in this comment, the Chazon Ish, as well as the Shabbina Rav, were both quoted, a number of other Gedolim were also quoted, not only as allowing grape juice, but actually as using grape juice. And so therefore it's an opinion that seems to have a lot of widespread support among some of the Gedolim HaPoskim. So it seems to be a machlokus, this issue, and we see from the way it's expressed by Rav Moshe, or on behalf of Rav Moshe, on behalf of the Rav, is that it revolves around this cheirus in opposite ways, that either cheirus means it has to be intoxicating, or cheirus means it has to be something that you like, which may exclude wine if that's the type of mentality that you have. There's another point that Talmud Yerushalmi has, which is especially relevant to this year, is Shemitah year. So the Talmud Yerushalmi raises the question of whether Yayin Shel Shvius is acceptable, and it comes to the conclusion that it is. If you have wine that comes from the Shemitah produce, so that apparently can be used for the Seder, and that was a question that the Yerushalmi posed. So on the side of the page of the Yerushalmi, you have a commentary, it's called Korban Ha'eda. And over there he explains, what's the issue? He explains, why is it that you might think that wine that's from Shvius is not going to be acceptable. And he considers the issue that maybe it's not called lachem. That we sometimes find, this is really something that comes from the halachas of Esrog, the lulav and Esrog, that we sometimes find when it comes to mitzvos of discussion, that is it necessary not only for you, let's say, to eat something or for you to use something, but is it required also that you own it. We find that that's a requirement when it comes to Lulav and Esrog, at least for the first day of Sukkot, you have to actually own the Lulav and Esrog. So maybe we should say, there's a discussion when it comes to matzah, there's a discussion by some other mitzvot, maybe we should say for the four cups of wine that you have to actually own the four cups. So why is that a problem if you have to actually own the four cups? Maybe you own this Shvi'is wine. So what comes out from the Karbet Ha'idah, there's a discussion about this in the contemporary Sefer of Shalos and Tshuvos called the Tshuvos Lahoris Nassim of Rav Nassim Gishtetner, that since when it comes to Shvi'is wine, so you're not totally free to do whatever you want with it, you have certain limitations as to how you can take care of it, how you can deal with it, so maybe that's not called ownership. Maybe ownership means that you have to be able to do whatever you want with it. So as the Gishtetner suggests, that maybe this isn't just simply an application of the question of Lachem that we find by many other mitzvahs, but maybe here the issue is because of Cheres. When it comes to Cheres, that requires that we not be limited at all, that to have something which has its limitations on it, maybe that not only affects the question of Lachem, but maybe it also affects the question of feeling free, and maybe the four cups require that in a way that's unique and doesn't necessarily attach to all mitzvahs. So those are some ramifications of the question of Cheres, and that came out of our previous point, some various ramifications of how do we view the mitzvah of the four cups of wine. Do we see it as the mitzvah of drinking four times to parallel the four expressions of Geula? Or do we see it as a mitzvah to do mitzvahs of speech, which of which there are four, on wine? Now if we take the second view, if we say that it's speech-oriented mitzvahs on wine, so are we essentially leaving the four Lashonas of Geula behind? Are we saying that really the four cups of wine aren't connected to that, that it's a coincidence, the four doesn't have necessarily any connection to the Lashonas of Geula, it just happens to be the mitzvahs of the Seder that dictate how many cups of wine? It's not necessarily the case that we would have to abandon that in order to take this view. There is an interesting comment of the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma, in the Sefer Chumash, Meir Simcha Kohen Advinsk, he notes that one could perhaps parallel the two, which I have to say as an explanation, as an introduction, that he counts the four mitzvahs differently. He doesn't exactly have the four mitzvahs the way we listed it, but rather he counts the four mitzvahs as Kiddush and benching and the two halves of challah. And therefore he says those four mitzvahs, Kiddush, benching, and two halves of challah, have to be done al hakos. And that does relate to the four lashonos of Geula in a very significant way. It says that in each case, when we talk about a type of Geula that God does for us, it's our obligation to have a corresponding act that matches that act of Geula. So for example, so we talk about Moses, God takes us out of Egypt. So if we want to be deserving of this taking out, so we have to match it. We have to match it with a similar act of separation that we also separate ourselves. So Kiddush represents our sanctification, represents the fact that we separate ourselves, and therefore that matches God's act of Hotzeisi. Then we go on to say V'hitzalti, that God saves us. So if we want God to save us, so we have to make sure that we're not killing each other. So sometimes we're going to be in such a fight with each other, we're going to kill each other. So why would we do that? We do that because we have, unfortunately, sometimes a scarcity mentality, that we think there's not enough to go around, and that we have to kill each other in order to get what's there, and that's why we feel that we have to fight. But if we believe that there's abundance, we believe that we're all taken care of, and that we don't have to kill each other in order to stay alive, so then we're not going to have to hurt each other, and again, that's our way of matching a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So we focus on benching. Benching reminds us of how much we have, reminds us of how we're well taken care of, and therefore we don't have this need to go after each other. So too, as we continue, when it goes on to the Ga'alti, so we want to be redeemed, so it's up to us again to remember who we are, to remember our yichus, to remember our history, and to go back to our origins as a nation, And that, as Meshachasna suggests, that's what the first half of Hallel represents this going back to our origins, while the second half of Hallel, of the Lakafti, that represents our belief in the future. And again, that if we want a Kadosh Baruch Hu to take us to the next step, so we show also that we believe in that future, and that's what this second half of Hallel represents. This represents our aspiration to be a nation in the image that Kadosh Baruch Hu has asked of us. So all of these points therefore suggest that really it's not two separate ideas. It's not that either we take the four languages of Geula or we take an idea of mitzvos recited al hakos, but rather it's the same idea, that each mitzvah that we do Pesach night is an expression of our recognizing that Geula is not a passive act, that Geula is not something that just happens to us, but the very nature of freedom, the very nature of the fact that we're no longer slaves, that we're no longer robots, but that we are people of free will, is that we participate in our own Geula, that we have to come and match that which God is doing for us with an equivalent act of devotion, an equivalent act of commitment, so that we are also redeeming ourselves at the same time as we are being redeemed. And this could perhaps also explain another concept that we find the Gemara tells us in the Sefer Pesachim on the Kuf Yud-Chet, that there is also a concept of a fifth cup of wine, very interesting, a fifth cup of wine which is optional. And this is how the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch understand it, that it's not necessary, it's not obligatory, but in theory, so you have this idea of a fifth cup. It's a very unusual idea, a fifth cup which isn't actually a necessity, so what does that represent? So first of all, if you're going to have a fifth cup, so we have to know what does that fifth cup correspond to. If we said the four cups correspond to the four languages of Geula, so we need something for the fifth cup. So the Ravid understands that it's a verb you find in the next pasuk of the Hevesi. But the Netziv has a different suggestion. And that suggestion is that it's a verb that we find again in that same pasuk with the four Lashonos, but it's a very different type of verb. It's a verb that really refers to us rather than to something that Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing. And it's the phrase, V'yadatem k'ani Hashem, that you should know that I am God who has taken you out of Egypt. So if that's the case, we can understand how this comes together. That essentially, this represents not something Kadosh Baruch Hu does to us, but represents our recognition of the experience and our awareness and our participation in our own Geula. So yes, this one has to be optional. This one has to be outside of the four obligatory cups, because not everyone merits such a distinction. Not everyone is on the level where they necessarily reach this point of Yadatna. It depends how you relate to the other four. If you encounter the other four in such a way that you are an active participant in your own redemption, that each one of these languages of Geula means something to you that you come and match, so then ultimately you come to understand what the whole theme is, what the whole message of redemption is, and you come to represent the fifth cup, V'yadatem k'ani Hashem. I think those are just some themes that we see how the halacha and the hashgafa of the four cups of wine come together. I don't want to go too long, so maybe we'll just quickly review now what we spoke about. We spoke about this idea that we have an obligation, the four cups of wine, which is different than most of the other obligations of Purim, of Pesach Neh, excuse me, because not only is it something that's rooted in rabbinical law, but it's purely rabbinical law. It's not something that we find in the Torah at all, except in the sense that the Yerushalmi tells us that it's connected to these four languages, Vahoseisi, Vizalti, Vigalti, Vilakashti. We talked a little bit about how the Ramban understands all of these phrases as representing a different stage in ascension from our Geula, that we were taken out of Mitzrayim, who were taken out of slavery completely, that the Egyptians were defeated, and that we were brought to Har Sinai, that we talked a little bit about the Mordechai's question of why not meat. Meat could also have four pieces of, and the idea that wine is supposed to represent the transformation, represent moving to a different stage. And then we talked about the question in general, so do we say that this is a mitzvah to drink wine, wine representing this type of freedom, and therefore four cups, the parallel of the four languages of Geula? Or do we say perhaps differently, that just like we normally find that sometimes brachos are recited on a cup of wine, so too the four mitzvos of the Seder night, originally we presented it as Kiddush, benching, Haggadah and Hallel should all be recited in the presence of a cup of wine. And we talked about some possible differences between the two understandings. We talked about the question of whether one could use Shomei Ka'ona to fulfill the mitzvah of four kosos, could you listen to the head of the household and fulfill the obligation through that? And it seems to be that this was a debate between the Rambam and Tosfos, perhaps reflecting the question of, is it a mitzvah of drinking, which should not be related to Shomei Ka'ona at all, or is it a mitzvah of speech, in a sense, speech done all across, and that perhaps does give itself over to the concept of Shomei Ka'ona. And we pointed out that it's not so clear that Tosfos really wholly endorses this idea of doing it through Shomei Ka'ona, that the context was just the idea of the Mishnah that you should go begging for the four cups of wine. So maybe Tosfos is saying that the requirement to go begging that comes from Pursumei Nisa, that's only for one separate household. But really the four cups of wine would require us to do more than that, but not necessarily to the extent of begging for them. And then we talked also about the question of how much you have to drink. Tosfos seems to say you should drink a mother lugum of a cheekful, again working off a kiddush model. And other Rishonim saw it more as an obligation of something objective of drinking a cup, either drinking the size of a cup or revius and most of that, or most of the cup itself, either way, seeing it as a drinking of the cup as opposed to a technical formality of drinking when one is reciting a mitzvah al-hakos. Then we talked also about the question of the Shraga HaMeir. I'll look at this question in a second. The question of the Shraga HaMeir, what if you don't recite Gal Viyavu and benching, so should you have to drink the third cup again in order to bench again on that? And that seems to also go to the question, is the mitzvah to bench all kosos, in which case maybe you should, or is it just to have the kosos, in which case it doesn't matter that you have to bench again, you fulfill the mitzvah of drinking. And then we discussed also the question of, a theoretical question of, what does the Gemara mean that it's no good if you mix it all into one shot? So Rashi says you mix it all into one cup, and we understood that to mean because you lose the idea of four, it's all into one. And the Rashbam says that the idea is that that would not even occur to us because there's no maximum measurement, so any cup is going to be considered one cup no matter how big it is. So the question is, what happens if you have them all in one shot, in one order, without spacing them out properly? And there again, the issue was losing the connection to the various mitzvahs. And then we discussed also the question of when the Gemara brings up the point of Cheres as a separate idea, how does that affect some halachic concepts? And we talked about the machlokas between Reb Moshe through his son and the Rav through Reb Shechter as opposite understandings of Cheres, that the Reb Moshe understood that even if you don't like wine, you have to drink something intoxicating, and Reb Moshe and the Rav understood that if you don't like wine, you dafka have to have not wine, you have to have grape juice because it's about Cheres. And we mentioned that Rebbe Rav and the Chazon Ish and others were reported to have had grape juice themselves. And we talked also about the Talmud Yerushalmi raising the question of whether you can use Shvius wine, and the issue there being possibly one of Lachem, one of ownership, or maybe one of Cheres. If you can't do whatever you want with it, maybe that's a lack in Cheres. And then we talked also about the question then, if you want to say that the mitzvah is to represent the different mitzvahs to Ahakos, so then does that mean that we have to abandon the Dal Lishonus of Geula? So then that question maybe could be dealt with by looking at the concept of the Meshach Chachma, with the Meshach Chachma having a slightly different layout of the four mitzvahs, counting Kiddush and benching and the two halves of Hallel, suggested that each time we have one of Lishonus of Geula, we need to parallel it. So the Hosesi is that we want to separate ourselves. The Meshach Chachma is in his commentary to the beginning of the era. Now we want to separate ourselves. The Hisalti, that we want to save ourselves by not fighting amongst each other. The Ga'alti, that we want to redeem ourselves by remembering our Yichus in the first half of Hallel. And the Lakashti, that we also see ourselves as a nation, that's what's represented by the second half of Hallel. And that this could affect the idea the Gemara has, that there's an optional fifth cup. What's this optional fifth cup mean? So the Rav says the fifth cup parallels Heveisi, and then it says it represents Viedatem Kiani Hashem. So maybe here the idea is again that not everyone merits this idea of knowing. We come to know through our active participation in our own geula, and that's the notion that the Meshach Chachma brings up by connecting these two ideas. Let's just look quickly at what this question is here. Does it impact the question whether one is a separate bracha or not for each of the four cups? So that's something that Bajram discusses, and other Achronim have a whole discussion about. I think that you're probably right that it might be dependent on this issue. If you want to say that it's one mitzvah to drink four cups, so then presumably one bracha really should in theory cover everything. It's one big continuum. But if the idea is that each mitzvah is its own mitzvah halakos, then the idea would seem to indicate that each bracha, each cup should get its own bracha. It would seem to make sense. So it's not necessarily 100%, but it's very likely that there is some connection between that question and this issue. Okay, so I guess we'll stop there unless there are any further questions. I'll look to see if anybody else has any further questions, observations, objections, patients. Okay, so I guess I will thank you very much. I wish you all a good night. I wish you a chag kosher v'sameach. I wish you have a meaningful Pesach in which we are active participants in the experience of Geulah. Thank you so much for your